This is Audible.
Recorded Books presents Hot Mess by Jeff Kinney. Narrated by Ramon D'Ocampo. June. Monday. My dad's always saying you can pick your nose, but you can't pick your family. And even though I get his meaning, it doesn't exactly make me want to share a bowl of popcorn with him. He's right about family, though, because the second you're born, you're automatically in a group of people you never asked to be a part of. The moment your parents bring you home, you meet a bunch of strangers with balloons shouting, "It's a boy!" In fact, when you're born, a bunch of stuff has already been decided for you, like where you'll live and even what language you'll speak. But since you can't actually talk yet, you can't tell the people taking care of you that mushed-up prunes and carrots are a bad combination. "I think he likes it," Mom would say when I was in my high chair. But even though I was only able to sputter, "Oomph," I did not, in fact, like it. The first thing you learn as a kid is that grown-ups are the ones in charge. And the second thing you learn is that they don't always make the best decisions. For example, the time they had me sit on the Easter Bunny's lap, even though his costume looked like something out of a horror movie. Then, you find out that the people in charge of you have people who are in charge of them. At least, that's the way it is in my family, where Grandma's the one who calls the shots. But you'd never know she had so much power just by looking at her. She seems like a very nice lady who is always baking for us. "I made you your favorite cookies." There's actually a whole story to how Grandma became the head of our family. When my great-grandmother Meemaw passed away, someone needed to step up to take her place as our leader. But since Grandma was the youngest of four sisters, it didn't look like she'd be the one to take over the family. But then something happened that changed all that. For Easter brunch one year, Grandma made a pot of meatballs, and everyone went crazy for them. Great Uncle Herman declared that Grandma was the best cook in the family. Everybody else agreed, which I'm sure was hard for her older sisters. The way it works in my family is that if you're the best cook, you get to host the big holidays like Thanksgiving and Christmas. But Grandma's older sisters all live far away, and they don't like to travel on holidays. So, Great Aunt Lou came up with a special recipe of her own to try and one-up Grandma, but she just couldn't top Grandma's meatballs. "Care for some spinach dip?" Great Aunt Lou said as she glopped it on our plates. Ever since Grandma introduced her special meatballs, everyone's been trying to get her to tell them the secret recipe. But Grandma's no dummy. She knows that giving it up would be giving up her power. So, she just tells everybody that her meatballs only have one ingredient, and it's love. Nobody seems satisfied with that answer, though. And lately, a few of my aunts have been trying to steal the recipe. Last Christmas, Aunt Gretchen tried to sneak away with a few meatballs so she could take them to a lab and get them analyzed for their ingredients. The only reason she didn't get away with it was because Grandma's dog, Sweetie, sniffed them out before she could get to her car. And Sweetie can bark really loud. Bark! 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 Then one night, Aunt Audra came to stay with Grandma and hid her phone in a kitchen cabinet so she could record Grandma making a batch of meatballs. But Grandma discovered the phone and put it in the garbage disposal. Everybody's always telling Grandma her recipe is so good, she should open a restaurant and make a pile of money. My Aunt Veronica is a businesswoman, and she even came up with a plan for a whole chain of restaurants that would serve Grandma's meatballs. The tagline would be, "From my kitchen to yours." But Grandma shut that idea down by saying that you can't get a real home-cooked meal in a restaurant, and her meatballs were only for the family. I don't mean to sound harsh or anything, but I hope Grandma shares her recipe with someone in the family soon, because she's not getting any younger. In fact, she just moved out of her house and into an assisted living center a few miles away. Mom says Grandma's happy there because she's with people her age and they have lots of activities. But I sure hope my kids don't try and ship me off to a place like that when I'm old, because I'm actually looking forward to being a burden to my children. I like to imagine they'll take me on outings like bowling well into my old age, even when I can barely heave the ball down the lane anymore. Up! Bonk. Grandma's turning 75 soon, and my mom and her sisters told Grandma they wanted to throw a big party for her birthday. But Grandma says she doesn't want anyone to go to any trouble for her, and she doesn't have the energy for a party like that anymore. Then Grandma said what would make her really happy is if everyone else went to Ruddy Neck Island, where the family used to vacation back when Mom and her sisters were kids. Grandma said the only gift she wanted was a photo of the whole family on the beach with the old lighthouse in the background, like the picture she keeps in her apartment. I guess Mom and her sisters couldn't say no to Grandma's birthday request because they'd feel too guilty. So, just like that, everybody's summer plans got turned upside down, which proves Grandma is the one pulling the strings in our family. I'm not looking forward to this trip, though, because I'm not really a beach person. But Mom says we'll make happy family memories, and she even booked the same house they stayed in as kids to make the vacation extra special. From the picture, the beach house looks a little small to me, and there are a whole lot more people in the family now than there were when Mom and her sisters were young. But what I'm really nervous about is the combination of people going on vacation together. Mom and her sisters only see each other a few times a year, and there's a reason for that. Whenever they're together, all they do is fight. And sometimes it gets so bad between them that Grandma has to step in to break things up. So I want to say for the record that this whole trip is a bad idea. The way I see it, a family vacation is like a recipe, and some ingredients just don't mix. Tuesday. Mom's been trying to get me and my brothers excited by showing us old photo albums from her family vacations on Ruddy Neck Island. But every so often, there's a page where someone was cut out of a picture. Mom explained that if one of my aunts dated some boy and they broke up, Grandma would cut them out of the photo. That's because she feels like family photo albums are only for family. All of a sudden, something I always used to wonder about made sense. When I was little, I found an envelope stuffed with cutouts of teenagers, and I never knew who they were. I'd play with them like they were action figures, and I created these crazy storylines for each character.
Tell me where you're hiding the secret plans.
I'm not giving them up without a fight.
Then prepare to meet your doom.
The last time Mom's family went to Ruddy Neck Island, she and her sisters were in high school. Aunt Keiki must have had a boyfriend that summer because there were a bunch of pictures of her next to someone who'd been cut out. But when I asked Mom about Aunt Keiki's boyfriend, she said it was a long time ago and she couldn't remember anything about him. I guess Grandma got sick of cutting ex-boyfriends out of photos, because eventually she made a rule that you're not allowed to be in family pictures unless you've officially married in. And that's a little awkward for Vincent, who's been dating Aunt Keiki for 6 years, but always has to stand behind the camera when we take our family photos. We learned our lesson about this kind of thing by taking too many pictures of Noah, who dated Aunt Veronica for a while. Everybody in the family loved Noah, and he was front and center in a lot of our pictures. In fact, a couple of times, he even made it into our family newsletter that Grandma mails out every year. The Family Follies. Noah Does It Again. Promoted to Regional Manager. Unfortunately, it didn't work out between Noah and Aunt Veronica, so he vanished from the family newsletter. And that made things kind of awkward whenever our family would run into someone who was on the mailing list. Because they'd ask things like,
"Hey, any updates on that Noah fella?"
But what was even more awkward was when Grandma found out Noah still had a t-shirt from our family reunion, and she went to his gym to make him give it back. I think Vincent's planning on proposing to Aunt Keiki one day, and he knows he needs to get Grandma's blessing first. He's been working hard to impress her, but I can tell she's going to milk this as long as she can. After all, he is mowing her lawn. To be honest, I really don't understand why Vincent's so eager to be a part of our family. In fact, if he wants my slot, I'd be happy to just hand it to him. And I don't know if there are lawyers or paperwork involved in that kind of a deal, but I'd be willing to do whatever it takes to get this thing done. Wednesday. Even though I'm not looking forward to spending a week at the beach with my family, there's one thing I am excited about doing, and that's going out to eat. Mom says Ruddy Neck Island has a bunch of restaurants, and I'm planning on eating at a different one every night. At home, we almost never go out to eat, and when we do, it's almost always to a family-style restaurant like Corny's. So I'm looking forward to going to a restaurant where they don't use a garden hose to clean off your table. Whoosh! It would also be nice to go to a place where you eat off a plate instead of from a bucket. But I'm kind of worried about how my family might behave at a classy restaurant, because the last time we ate at a fancy place, it didn't go well. We went out for dinner to celebrate Mom getting her master's degree, and the restaurant had white linen tablecloths. But my family is used to going to places like Corny's, where the tablecloths are made of paper and you can draw on them with crayons and markers. And before anyone realized what he was doing, Manny had covered his end of the table with drawings. I guess those fancy tablecloths are expensive because the restaurant made my parents pay for it. But Mom decided that if we had to pay for the tablecloth, that meant we owned it. So we took it home with us. And now we pull it out every time we have a special meal. But whenever one of my cousins comes to our house, they write on the tablecloth. And the last time Aunt Gretchen's family came to visit, one of her twins wrote a bad word in 6-inch letters in permanent marker. And that made Mom scream and drop the food. The thing with the tablecloth never would have happened if the members of my family just knew how to act civilized. My friend Rowley's family eats at their country club at least once a week, so they know how you're supposed to act at a fancy restaurant. But when the Jeffersons invited me to come along with them one time, I had no idea how you were supposed to behave in a place like that. First of all, I'm used to going to places where there are pictures of the different menu items, and you just point at what you want to order. But at the country club, there weren't any pictures, and the menu was all in French. So when Rowley ordered, "Je veux prendre salmon en papillon, merci," I thought it sounded kind of goofy. Ha ha! The restaurant also had expensive silverware, and there was a different type of fork for each course, which seemed a little silly to me. I'm just glad we're living in a time where the fork is what we use to eat, because it wasn't all that long ago that people actually used daggers to feed themselves. It's stressful enough in the cafeteria at my school without kids stabbing their food and working on their knife-throwing skills. There are certain types of food you wouldn't even be able to eat without a fork. And good luck to anyone trying to eat spaghetti with a knife. It would just slip right off. I wish I'd never learned to master the fork, though. When I was a baby, I really enjoyed being fed by someone else. Here comes the train. Choo-choo. Smack, smack. Once you learn to feed yourself, everyone expects you to keep doing it. But I'm looking forward to the day when a robot can feed me and I can free up my hands while I'm eating again. Num num.
Bleep bleep blorp.
The menus and the silverware weren't the only things that were different about the country club. At Corny's, the waiters wear cowboy hats and overalls with holes in them. But at the country club, the waiters were dressed in tuxedos and looked like they were going to a wedding. Each server had a different thing they were in charge of. There was even one guy whose whole job was to use a knife to scrape crumbs off the tablecloth. And I made sure to create lots of crumbs so that guy felt like he was earning his money. They even had people working in the bathroom. One guy's job was to hand you a little towel to dry your hands after you washed them, which seemed a little odd to me. In fact, at first, I didn't even realize that he was a restaurant employee. I thought he was just some random person who was hanging out near the sink, which is why I reported him to the manager. For an appetizer, the waiter brought us bowls of soup. I don't know what was in it, but it was really delicious. I remembered reading that in some countries, the way you show your appreciation to your server is by slurping your soup. But I got the feeling that's not the way you're supposed to do things at the Jefferson's Country Club. When I slurped, no one looked very impressed. When it came time to order the main course, I couldn't believe how expensive everything was. I tried to convince Mr. and Mrs. Jefferson to just give me the money they would have spent on my meal instead, because there was a lot I could do with that kind of cash. But Mr. Jefferson told me not to worry about how much things cost and to pick something from the menu I thought I'd enjoy. I couldn't decide between lobster tail and steak, though, so I ordered both. The main course took a long time to come, and while we were waiting for our dinner, the waiter kept refilling our breadstick basket. So by the time my two main courses arrived, I was totally stuffed. So I told the waiter to take my main courses back. I'm hoping that there's a restaurant like that on Ruddy Neck Island, because I don't feel like I've had the full fancy dining experience yet. Hopefully, when I get home, the Jeffersons will invite me back to their country club, because there were a few items on the dessert menu that looked like they were to die for. I let the Jeffersons know how much I appreciated that meal by letting out a huge belch on the way home. Saturday. Mom said her favorite part of her family vacations to Ruddy Neck Island was the ferry ride over. But that was the thing I was dreading the most. First of all, I've heard stories about killer whales randomly attacking boats, and a bunch of people screaming while whales crunch and smash our ferry doesn't sound like a great way to kick off a vacation to me. But the thing I was even more nervous about was pirates, because Mom said that back in the old days, Ruddy Neck Island was a notorious pirate hideout. Dad said it's been a long time since pirates sailed the seas around these parts, but I was worried that there could still be a few stragglers who never got the message to quit. And those guys are going to be pretty ticked off when they realize they've been missing out on things like cell phones and soft-serve ice cream all these years. Whenever you see a movie about pirates, there's always some kid on board whose job is to swab the decks or climb up into the crow's nest to be on the lookout for other ships. But I'd be totally useless in a job like that. I have a fear of heights, so I couldn't work as a lookout. I'd get seasick if I had to mop the deck while the ship was moving, and I'm pretty sure I'd be lousy at playing the fife. So they'd probably toss me overboard after a day or two. I figure the kids on those ships didn't choose to be pirates, which means they were kidnapped. And ever since I was little, I've been worried that could happen to me. When I turned 6 years old, my mother booked a harbor cruise for my birthday as a surprise. But when I saw the boat waiting at the dock with a bunch of party pirates on it, I had a total meltdown. Shriek! So Mom got tickets for a boat that didn't have a pirate theme, called Manatee Encounter. And I thought we were safe. But the pirate cruise caught up with us in the harbor and splooshed us with their water cannon. So I spent the rest of my birthday walking around in wet clothes. There are other things to worry about besides whales and pirates, though. We just wrapped up our unit on Greek mythology in school, And the thing those stories make clear is that the gods don't like people going where they don't belong. So before we stepped on the ferry this afternoon, I took a minute to show some proper respect by saying to the sea, "Oh, mighty Poseidon, please grant me safe passage into your kingdom." At first it was smooth sailing, but when the wind picked up in the middle of the ride and the waves got choppy, I was pretty nervous we might capsize. It was so rocky that half the people on board got sick. In fact, there were so many people throwing up overboard that I was afraid I might do it myself. I went inside to get away from everyone on deck, but the main cabin was like a hospital ward, which meant there was no place for me to escape. The ferry ride was only 3 hours, but it felt more like 3 days. And when we finally safely reached the shore, there was no one happier to be on dry land than me. I even kissed the pier. Mwah! Mwah! We took a cab into town, which turned out to be a mistake. There were so many pedestrians clogging the road that we couldn't even move, and nobody seemed concerned they were blocking traffic. Mom was getting anxious about how long it was taking because the sun was going down and it was starting to get dark. Plus, she had the only key, and she wanted to get to the house before her sisters did. So, after sitting in traffic for half an hour, she decided she'd had enough. We took our suitcases out of the trunk and walked the mile and a half to our beach house, which wasn't easy with all the stuff we were carrying. On top of that, Mom didn't seem to know where she was going. I guess there'd been a lot of development on the island since she was there with her family on their last trip, and it took her a long time to find the beach house where they used to stay. Mom took out the key to unlock the door, but it was cracked open, and we were surprised to discover that Aunt Gretchen and her twins were inside and had already made themselves at home. Aunt Gretchen was stretched out in the living room, filing her toenails, and the twins were beating each other with couch cushions. Aunt Gretchen said they got there a half hour earlier, and since the door was locked, they crawled in through the bathroom window. Then they put their stuff in the biggest bedroom, which Mom had been reserving for our family. I guess Mom didn't want to start that trip with a fight, so she just let Aunt Gretchen's family have the master bedroom. But the next biggest room was already occupied by Aunt Veronica and her dog Dazzle, who were both in the middle of a nap after a long day of traveling. I was surprised that Aunt Veronica made the trip, since she lives in the city with her dog, and the two of them almost never leave their apartment. That's because Dazzle is famous, and she can't really go out in public anymore. The way it happened is a little nuts. Aunt Veronica makes videos for the internet telling people how to invest their money, and sometimes Dazzle would walk through the background while Aunt Veronica was live streaming. But once her followers started noticing the dog, that's all they wanted to see. They'd leave comments like, "There's that dog again."
"What breed is that?"
"Apricot pug, I think." "OMG, I need one."
Aunt Veronica saw an opportunity, so she dropped the whole investment advice thing and just made videos about her pet. And within a year, Dazzle had 3.7 million followers and a line of merchandise that people can purchase online, including Dazzle mugs, Dazzle shirts, Dazzle pencils, and Dazzle phone cases. It turns out that when you've got millions of followers, companies will send you free products so that you use them in your videos. After a while, Dazzle got so much free stuff that Aunt Veronica had to move to a bigger apartment just to handle all the packages of treats and dog food that were coming in. But being a social media star comes with a lot of pressure, too. Aunt Veronica has to film Dazzle around the clock because when she's not streaming, she feels like she's losing money. Even mealtimes have to be properly lit and mic'd. I guess Aunt Veronica decided she couldn't do it all by herself anymore, though, so she hired a whole team of people to help her. And before long, Dazzle had a groomer, a photographer, a videographer, and one person whose only job was to keep the dog's nose wet. But fame's got a dark side, because crowds of people started showing up outside Aunt Veronica's apartment to get a glimpse of Dazzle. Apparently, you can make money selling candid shots of celebrities, and Aunt Veronica has to worry about someone taking an embarrassing picture of Dazzle they can sell to some sleazy magazine. When they have to go out so Dazzle can do her business, they cower under a giant umbrella. But a person can only keep their guard up for so long. And lately, people have been finding creative ways of getting unflattering photos by doing crazy things like hiding in trash cans. A few weeks ago, Aunt Veronica had to move again to an apartment on the other side of the city with better security. But the new place was too far out of the way for the dog's team, and they started quitting one by one. By then, Dazzle's groomer was pretty famous herself, and she opened her own salon. But from what I heard, all her people haircuts look like pet haircuts. She should have stuck with giving haircuts to dogs. Mom says Aunt Veronica wishes she'd never turned her dog into a social media star, because it's made both of their lives miserable. And I guess they've been looking forward to getting away and staying out of the public eye for a while. But that's not going to be easy. Right before the trip started, Aunt Veronica posted a fake picture of Dazzle in front of the Eiffel Tower to throw Dazzle's followers off the scent. But Aunt Veronica was a little sloppy with her photo editing, which is why the dog ended up with 5 paws. So now everyone on the internet has a theory about what's going on with the dog, and they're more curious about her than ever. The comments say things like,
5 paws.
I saw that too.
What are they trying to hide?
Pregnant? Personally, I think the whole social media thing is a little crazy. There's one guy online who films himself unboxing kitchen appliances, and he got so many followers, he was able to quit his day job. Back in olden times, people had lots of kids so they could work on the family farm. But if I ever have kids of my own, I'm going to put them to work being social media influencers. And the second they're born, they're going to have a camera in their face. The only reason I haven't tried becoming an influencer myself is because I don't have a phone. And that's pretty embarrassing because both of my cousins have one, and they're not even out of elementary school yet. Mom thinks Aunt Gretchen's twins are too young to have phones of their own, and that they're on electronics way too much. But Aunt Gretchen thinks Mom is overprotective, and once the two of them start arguing about this topic, there's no stopping them. Not that the twins notice. They're too busy playing on their virtual reality headsets. Aunt Gretchen accuses Mom of being a helicopter parent who's always hovering over us kids. But even though Aunt Gretchen might be right about that, I've always liked having a helicopter mom nearby to keep me safe, especially when I was little and would do things like run across the top of the monkey bars. La, 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 la. It was nice to know Mom was there to catch me if I fell. In fact, Mom saved me from a bunch of situations where I could have gotten myself seriously injured. Some of those kids were big. But maybe I've gotten a little too used to my mom having my back, because sometimes I get a little nervous crossing the street without help from a grown-up, and I've gotten some confused looks from strangers in the past when I've asked them, "Will you hold my hand?" Even though Mom can be a little overprotective, Aunt Gretchen lets Malcolm and Malvin do whatever they want. One time, Aunt Gretchen wasn't paying attention, and those little punks tied me to a chair. I think a little parenting would go a long way with those two. Speaking of being overprotective, Aunt Veronica treats Dazzle like she's her child. In fact, I'm pretty sure Dazzle thinks she's an actual human being, and Aunt Veronica gets touchy when you use certain phrases around her. She looked plain offended when Dad said,
"I'm dog tired after that trip."
Gasp!
Aunt Veronica thinks that if Dazzle realizes she's an animal, she won't be able to handle it. The first thing Aunt Veronica did when she got to the beach house was cover up all the mirrors and shiny surfaces so the dog wouldn't see her own reflection. Unfortunately, that's going to make it hard for everyone to use the toaster. I don't think it's fair to make Dazzle think she's a human being, because she's bound to find out the truth one day. I'll bet Tarzan got really messed up thinking he was an ape, especially during his teenage years. He must have wondered when the rest of his hair was going to come in. Aunt Veronica might be a little quirky, but she's nothing compared to my Aunt Audra, who showed up at the house a half hour after we did. And she didn't waste any time before she started acting like her kooky self, saying weird stuff like, "These candles will burn away any bad energy in the house." At least Mom gets along with Aunt Audra, because she's not that way with Aunt Keiki, who arrived a few minutes later. And I can always tell Mom and Aunt Keiki are being mean to each other, even when they're pretending to be nice. My mom says things like, "That shirt really compliments your gray hairs." And Aunt Keiki says things like, "Thanks, you're not as hunched over as usual." It seems like there's something else going on between Mom and Aunt Keiki that would explain why they don't get along. But every time I ask Mom what the deal is with the two of them, Mom always changes the subject. We really need to dust the top of those cabinets. The only person Aunt Keiki treats worse than Mom is Dad. She's always doing things like accidentally spilling drinks on him. Whoopsie. So it's pretty obvious he must have done something to set her off at some point. I can tell Dad doesn't love being around Mom and her sisters when they're all together. And when he found out about the trip, he tried to get out of it by saying things are really busy at work. But Mom said Grandma wanted us to be together. And besides, Dad needed to be there for the family picture. If I ever get married, it's going to be to someone who's an only child, because you're not just marrying a person, you're marrying their entire family. Aunt Keiki claimed the last bedroom with a king-sized bed, and Aunt Audra took the room with the queen. That meant my parents had to sleep on the bunk beds, with outer space-themed sheets on them, which they didn't seem too thrilled about. But they should be glad they got beds to sleep in at all, because the rest of us had to scramble for what we could find. Vincent found a cot in a closet and set it up in the hallway between the kitchen and the bathroom. Manny made a nest with blankets in a dresser drawer in the living room. And Roderick found a portable crib in the pantry that he set up in the living room. I couldn't see how he could sleep in a playpen, but the second he laid down, he was out like a light. That left me with the couch, and at first I thought I hit the jackpot, but that thing smelled like sweat and suntan lotion and feet, and who knows how many farts have gotten trapped in those cushions over the years. Sniff, sniff. So I put a blanket on the floor and used a throw pillow from the couch, but I guess Vincent couldn't fall asleep, because he came into the living room and watched a reality TV show with the volume at full blast. "Jerry, I'm afraid you've been voted out." Eventually, Vincent went back to his cot, so I got up and turned off the TV. I started to fall asleep, but I'd forgotten all about Malcolm and Melvin, who had gone on a snack run. Wham! They turned on the lights in the kitchen, which woke up everyone in the living room. Then the twins plopped onto the couch and ate their snacks in front of the TV, while I was laying right there on the floor trying to sleep. So this trip's off to a rough start. And if this vacation is anything like that reality TV show, I'd be happy to vote myself off the island.
"Doug, it's time for you to go."
Sunday. Mom woke everyone up this morning bright and early. I don't know how anyone else slept, but I felt like I'd been sleeping on a brick. And that's because I kind of had been. One of the twins swiped my throw pillow in the middle of the night and replaced it with a book, which wouldn't have been so bad if it wasn't a hardcover. My plan was to hang back at the house and get a few more hours of sleep while everyone else went off and did their thing. But Mom said it was important for the family to do everything together on this vacation, and she told us all to get ready for a day at the beach. Like I said, I'm not really a beach person, but I figured I could just lay low and take a nap under the umbrella. So we had a quick breakfast, packed up our stuff, and headed down there. When Mom told us about the beach house, I thought it was actually on the beach. But we had to haul all our gear there, which wasn't a lot of fun. Mom put me in charge of the cooler, which was heavy because it was packed with stuff like sandwiches and water bottles. Plus, the twins were riding on top of it. It wasn't so bad pulling it when we were walking on the road because it was on wheels, but the wheels were pretty useless once we got to the beach, where they dug into the sand. At least that knocked the twins off. To make matters worse, we had to walk all the way around this big taped-off area that was a nesting spot for piping plovers, which Aunt Audra explained are endangered. According to her, there are only a few thousand plovers in the world, and this beach is one of the only protected habitats left. With all that space being taken up by birds, it didn't leave much room for us humans, so it took a while to find a spot that was big enough for our stuff. Mom told me I needed to put on sunscreen, but I already took care of that back at the house, because when it comes to protecting my skin, I don't mess around. The more time you spend out in the sun, the older you look later on, and my goal is to be one of those grandpas who looks great for their age. When I'm old, women will pass me by and say, "It's so nice of you to spend time with your mother," and I'll be able to respond, "Actually, this is my wife." Even when I've got my skin slathered in sunscreen, I try to stay in the shade as much as possible, but that's not always easy. Especially when your family only has one beach umbrella. Back in the old days, people used to carry around these little umbrellas called parasols, so they took their shade with them. And sometimes, I feel like I was born in the wrong era, because from the paintings I've seen of that period, those people really knew how to live. They sailed and bicycled and lounged on the grass. It looks very relaxing. The other thing those guys had right were their bathing suits, which covered up a lot, because these days, when you go to the beach, there's just a little too much skin for my taste. I've noticed that the more fit a person is, the fewer clothes they wear, and if I ever get in shape, believe me, I'm going to be the exact same way. I'll even ice skate shirtless. Once everyone got settled, Mom tried to get us to join her down at the water for a swim. But I already decided before we got here that I wasn't going swimming on this trip. For a bunch of reasons. For starters, in the ocean, you can't see through the water, which means you never know what's under the surface. For all you know, under those cute little kids and their floaties, there could be a giant octopus. And even though Mom told me there hasn't been a shark attack on Ruddy Neck Island in 100 years, I don't want to be the one to break the streak. Mom always says that sharks are misunderstood, and that they're not really a threat to humans. But all you need to do is take one look at how many teeth a shark has in its mouth to know that they're made for one purpose, and that's biting. The only good thing about sharks is that they've got a fin on their back that pops out of the water, so at least you know when one is coming. Or at least most of the time you do. There's always going to be that one prankster who swims with a plastic shark fin strapped to his head. Shriek! But if a shark somehow gets born without a fin one day, it's going to be bad news for us humans. So I'm just hoping sharks don't suddenly mutate into the no-fin variety. I learned about evolution in science class and how animals adapt with mutations. Anteaters used to have short noses, and then one was randomly born with a long one. It was easier for that guy to get at the ants deep in their anthills, which meant it could get more food. And after that, the short-nosed anteaters got left in the dust. That's like if anteaters went to middle school and the one with the longest nose was the cool one who got all the girls. The same sort of thing might happen with human beings, and somebody could be born with some weird change that gives them an advantage over everyone else. But sometimes, it takes millions of years for there to be even a small change in a species, which means I won't live long enough to see it happen. So I've been exposing myself to lots of gamma rays from the TV to hurry things along. Ah. This kid at school named Albert Sandy always says that one day people are going to develop gills so they can breathe underwater. And even though that sounds kind of awesome, I hope it doesn't happen to me first, because the bullying would be pretty terrible. Kids would constantly be throwing buckets of water at me and squirting me with water guns. Squirt, squirt. Ah! If we need to live underwater one day, I'm going to have to wear a wetsuit full time. My skin gets wrinkly after 20 minutes in the bathtub, so I can't imagine what it would look like after a week of living in the ocean. Living underwater might not be that bad, actually. For one thing, nobody will get bent out of shape about the small stuff, like juice spills. Oops.
It's fine. It floats.
But if the ocean is our future home, we need to start treating it better. No more bathing ourselves in it, or shaving in it, or leaving our kids' diapers in it. Not too hard to see why sharks are always biting people. Something that annoys me is that Aunt Gretchen encourages her twins to pee in the ocean. At least, I'm just hoping that's all they're doing in there. I hear her kids doing a lot of grunting.
Grunt, 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 grunt!
Even if I did want to swim in the ocean today, I wouldn't feel safe doing it. The lifeguards are all teenagers, and I wouldn't put my life in the hands of someone who isn't even allowed to vote. Dad used to be a lifeguard back when he was a teenager, so he's been trying to get Roderick to earn his life-saving certificate. But it's kind of hard for me to imagine Roderick in charge of anyone's safety, even little kids in the baby pool. One of the reasons I stopped swimming at the beach is because I got nervous the lifeguards weren't paying enough attention. So whenever we'd go to the beach, I'd always introduce myself to them to make sure they knew my name and what I looked like. That way, I figured I had a better chance of getting rescued if I was struggling out there. I'd even bring them snacks a few times a day, because you've got to take care of the people who take care of you. Extra pickles, just the way you like it. It's the same reason I never forget to send my pediatrician a Christmas card during the holidays. Happy Holidays from your favorite patient, Greg Heffley. I could tell the lifeguards at Ruddy Neck Island were totally distracted with their phones, and if a rogue wave comes crashing to shore, carrying away all of the kids, pets, and beach umbrellas, I doubt they'd even notice. So I was happy to just lie under the umbrella and take it easy today. But there were these guys walking around the beach using metal detectors, which made it kind of hard to relax with all the beeping and meeping. It made me think there could be pirate treasure buried a few feet beneath where I was sitting, and I felt like I should be digging instead of taking it easy on my blanket. I started imagining what it would be like to find a chest full of gold. You'd probably want to keep it a secret from everyone, or your friends and family would constantly be hitting you up for money, which could get annoying after a while. That's all I need. Roderick asking me to pay for his kid's dental work.
Looks like Junior's gonna need braces.
But I'm guessing they'd figure it out anyway. Because when you pay for everything in gold coins, even tossing coins to the valet, people will start talking.
Keep the change. Flick.
I actually have no idea what a single gold coin is worth, but it's got to be worth a lot, since gold is pretty rare. Back in olden times, people used to pay for everything in gold and silver. But then some genius came up with the idea of printing paper money, and somehow they got everyone else to go along with it. I bet the first guy who thought of it said something like,
"This little piece of paper with an old guy's face on it is worth 5 cows and a goat."
And the other guy just said,
"Sounds fair."
One of these days, someone's going to come up with a new form of money, and that'll replace the system we've got now. And I'm just hoping that someone is me. I've been testing the waters with a new monetary system I came up with last Christmas. I convinced Rowley that cucumber seeds were really valuable, and I traded a handful of them for his new video game controller. Unfortunately, Mr. Jefferson found out about our trade and came down to my house to take Rowley's controller back. He never returned my seeds, though. So, I'd better not see any cucumbers growing in the Jefferson's garden this year, or we're going to have a difficult conversation. I decided it wasn't worth going to the trouble of looking for buried treasure on the beach, though. I figured, if you start digging, you're just as likely to find a skeleton as a treasure chest, and I'm sure the paperwork you have to file for that kind of thing is insane. I felt kind of bad for Dad today, because he was the only person in our family who didn't get to relax. That's because he spent the whole afternoon going back and forth to the beach house, grabbing stuff people forgot to bring with them. And after Dad went back to the house 3 times for Aunt Cakey, I realized she was messing with him for fun. "I'm back with your suntan lotion," Dad said. "I thought I told you to get the one that was SPF 50. When Dad finally got a break, he took a tuna sandwich out of our cooler and sat down to eat it. But a seagull dive-bombed him and snatched it right out of his hand. Ah! I've had issues with seagulls in the past, and I wasn't willing to let one steal my food. So I took my sandwich with me to the bathhouse, which wasn't the best eating experience I've ever had, since the only place to sit was on the floor between the sink and the urinal.
Munch, munch.
I was pretty thirsty, so I planned on grabbing a bottle of water from our cooler. But the family on the blanket next to us was helping themselves to our drinks.
Glub, glub.
Glub, glub, glub. Glub, glub.
We confronted them about taking our water, but they said they thought the cooler was theirs. That wasn't very believable, though, since our name was written on the side. Things got a little uncomfortable, so the other family packed up their stuff and left. I didn't want another family stealing our drinks, so I wrote something on the lid of the cooler with a marker to discourage anyone else from opening it. Human organs keep refrigerated. By that time, it was the middle of the afternoon, and the sun was blazing. So Mom asked Dad to go back to the house and bring us another case of water to replace the bottles those people took. I was glad Dad was getting more water because it's important to stay hydrated. My science teacher said the human body is 60% water, but that seems a little high to me. Because if people really were 60% water, we'd all look pretty freaky. We'd be all wet and transparent. I bet we'd even be able to see each other's organs.
Splish.
But maybe he's right, and the reason old people are so wrinkly is that they're leaking really slowly. In fact, I've made it my personal mission to keep my great-uncle Colton hydrated, because he looks like he could be down to about 15% by now. Dad got back with a case of water, and he also brought a big bag of beach toys Mom told him to fetch from the house. And even though I wasn't in the mood to break a sweat, this was one of those times when I could tell Mom wasn't going to take no for an answer. Mom pulled out all sorts of old-fashioned toys that she said used to keep her and her sisters busy for hours when they were kids. But people must have been wired a little different back then, because the hula hoops and paddleball sets weren't doing anything for me. The one toy that had some promise was a kite, but it was too hard to steer it while watching where I was stepping, and I might have inadvertently crushed a couple of sandcastles. Oops. And after making a bunch of people mad, I decided flying a kite wasn't worth the hassle. So I tied the string to the handle of the cooler and went back into relaxation mode. But I must have dozed off and had no idea how much time went by. The thing that woke me was the ocean water soaking our beach blanket. Splish. The tide was coming in fast, and my family wasn't anywhere to be found, so I had to gather up our stuff before everything washed out to sea. But that was easier said than done, especially without any help. I was so focused on collecting our things that I wasn't thinking about what else was in the water. and that's when I felt something disgusting attach itself to my leg. I remembered Mom saying this island used to have a jellyfish problem, and I was positive that's what this thing was. But in my panic, I couldn't remember what you were supposed to do in the case of a jellyfish attack. The best I could think of was to stop, drop, and roll, so that's what I went with. Ah! It turns out that what I thought was a jellyfish was actually just a clump of seaweed. And I guess the lifeguards were used to these kinds of false alarms, because nobody leapt to my rescue, even though I was rolled into a ball, screaming and shrieking. After I calmed down a little, I rinsed my leg off in the ocean. But I should have been paying better attention, because I got totally decked by a wave. Ah! I dragged myself out of the water, and even though I was a little wobbly, at least I was out of danger. But now there was a pile of sand trapped in the netting of my bathing suit, and it was getting so baggy that people were starting to notice. I couldn't just drop my drawers and flush out my bathing suit, so I moved to deeper water, where no one could see below my waist. I tried emptying out the netting, which wasn't easy to do since I was fighting against the undertow. And all that work was making me grunt. 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 All of a sudden, I had the lifeguard's attention, and from the way she reacted, she must have thought I was using the ocean as a toilet. Tweet! Tweet! She tried to get me to come in to shore, but I wasn't budging. And I guess lifeguards must train for this sort of thing, because she hauled me to the shore in no time flat. By that point, half our stuff had washed away, and the rest was soaking wet. Luckily, the cooler didn't get swept away, so at least I had a place to sit and catch my breath. Pant, pant. I remember there were still a few bottles of water in the cooler, and I pulled out the ones that were left. But I didn't realize those water bottles were the only thing weighing the cooler down, and the kite yanked it clear off the ground. I ran after the cooler, but it stayed just out of reach, and I might have actually caught up with it if there weren't so many obstacles in my way, like kids digging giant holes in the sand. The cooler finally got wedged in some sand dunes, and I had a chance to grab it before it went airborne again. But when I realized I was standing in the plover nesting area, I decided maybe I should leave the cooler be. I left the piping plover area as quick as I could, and luckily nobody saw me. Then I went back to our umbrella and wrapped myself in towels so I could get out of the sun. Because when it comes to protecting your skin, you can never be too careful. Monday. When we got back to the beach house last night, all I wanted to do was jump in the shower. But we only have one bathroom for 13 of us, and I had to wait my turn. I was dead last in line, even behind Dazzle the dog. By the time I finally got in there, it was so steamy I could barely see. And it wasn't easy maneuvering between my aunt's wet bathing suits without touching anything. My plan was to take a quick shower and get out, but there was 6 inches of sludgy gray water in the bathtub, and the drain was clogged with hair. Worse than that, there was no hot water left, so I had to take a cold shower. But I figured it was worth it, because I wanted to feel clean and fresh for when we went out to eat. The only problem was that I couldn't get dry. Everyone had used up the towels, so I had to use toilet paper to try and dab my skin. It was taking way too long, so I tried shaking off, the way dogs do. Shake, shake, shake. But I couldn't really get the hang of it, and all I did was get water everywhere. I guess I should have tried cleaning up after myself, because Aunt Keiki accused me of peeing on the toilet seat. So now there's a rule in the house that us guys have to sit down when we go to the bathroom. Everyone was mad at everybody else for taking too long, so Mom created a bathroom schedule with 15-minute time slots, and I got the 6:30 p.m. shift. I can't really control when I need to use the bathroom, though, and neither can Manny, who went out the window instead of waiting for his 9:30 p.m. shift to start. Psst, psst. I decided I'd just use the bathroom at whatever restaurant we went to, because I figured they'd have a nice one there, and I was looking forward to getting a clean, warm towel from the attendant to dry my hands, like in Rowley's fancy country club restaurant. But when I asked Mom where we were going for dinner, I got some very bad news. Mom said we wouldn't be going out at all on this trip. She said that Grandma always made home-cooked meals on family vacations, and we were going to carry on that tradition. Personally, I think family traditions are a little overrated. Just because you do something once doesn't mean you should keep doing it. The only tradition we've ever had is when Meemaw used to make everyone put their pants on their heads during Easter brunch. We all thought it was a little wacky, but Meemaw was raised in the old country, and we figured this was a custom where she grew up. But after a while, Meemaw started doing other goofy things, like wearing her underwear over her clothes, and we realized she was starting to lose her marbles. I'm also not a big fan of eating together as a family. If caveman clans ate at the same time, our ancestors never would have made it out of the Stone Age, because no one would have been looking out for saber-toothed tigers. The other thing cavemen did right was that they only ate after a big hunt, and I'd much rather do it like that than have to eat three meals a day. Just give me one giant stack of pizzas. While I'm on the subject, there are a few other things I'd change around meals. First of all, I'd have a rule where no one is allowed to talk to you while you're eating, because my mom always decides to tell me the things I need to do when I'm in the middle of eating my cereal. And after your crunch, 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 done rinsing your crunch, 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 crunch bowl, I want you crunch, 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 start the dishwasher crunch, 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 and make sure the crunch, crunch, crunch isn't any syrup on the plates. Plus, I don't like to be touched while I'm eating. I can totally understand why dogs snap at people who bother them while they're trying to enjoy their food. If Roderick pokes me while I'm having lunch, I let out a grrrr. Mom said we were going to have spaghetti and garlic bread, and the grown-ups got to work making the meal. But the kitchen was tiny, and there were way too many bodies for such a tight space. Everyone was bending and bumping and spilling. Plus, with a pot of water boiling on the stove and the oven going, it got super hot in the kitchen. So everyone was all sweaty, even though we just showered. Roderick poured water on his head. Aunt Gretchen stood in front of the open refrigerator, and Dad was now cooking shirtless. Everybody had a different way of doing things, and different ideas about how to handle food. Aunt Audra accidentally spilled a whole box of spaghetti on the floor, so Mom said we were going to have to throw it out. But Aunt Gretchen said the boiling water would kill the germs from the floor, and Aunt Cakey agreed. That turned into a giant argument, and while that was happening, the garlic bread got burned. Mom settled things by putting a new pot of water on the stove to boil, and said they could put the floor noodles in that one. Aunt Cakey said, the way you know spaghetti has been cooked long enough is by throwing it against the wall to see if it sticks. I don't think Mom was crazy about that approach either, so she set up a third pot for the wall noodles. Splat. Mom and her sisters weren't the only ones who had strong opinions about food. Vincent works in a fancy restaurant, and he kept testing the sauce to see if it needed any spices. But Vincent kept putting the spoon in his mouth, and then back in the pot. So I decided I'd skip the sauce. Mom told me that Vincent is a sommelier, which is a person who knows a lot about wine. She said when Vincent is testing a glass of wine, he takes a sip, swishes it in his mouth, and spits it out. I had no idea there were people who do that kind of thing. And if you can get a job as a taco sommelier, I know exactly what I'm doing for a living. I'll be taking bites out of tacos and spitting them in the trash. I'll even let Rowley hold the can. Before the trip, Grandma cooked a batch of her meatballs and sent them along in a cooler. But instead of putting all the meatballs in one big plastic bag, Grandma sent individual bags for each person. and you knew exactly how much Grandma likes you by how many meatballs you got. I felt good about my 5 until I saw that Manny had 8. Roderick only had 2. I felt bad for Vincent, who didn't get a bag, since he's not officially in the family. And I guess Aunt Cakey isn't the type of person who likes to share. Aunt Audra didn't get any meatballs either, but that's because she's a vegetarian. And if cows ever learn to speak English, I'm sure I'll become a vegetarian too. I'll feel too guilty walking past them with fast food in my hand.
What you got in the bag, Greg?
Aunt Audra is real serious about healthy eating, and she always makes the rest of us read the labels on our packaged food. Butylated hydroxyanisole, propylparaben, monosodium glutamate. She says if you can't pronounce the ingredients, you shouldn't eat them. Aunt Audra says that instead of listing the number of calories on the packaging of processed food, what they should really do is tell you how much eating it will shorten your life. But if I knew that eating a candy bar would take 3 minutes off my life, I'm not sure I'd let that stop me.
Munch. Crunch.
Worth it. After dinner was ready, we squeezed together at the kitchen table and ate our meal. Dinner conversation started off pleasant, but it went downhill pretty fast. Aunt Gretchen talked about politics, and everybody had something to say. Thankfully, Mom stepped in before things went off the rails. Mom started a list of safe topics that wouldn't cause any arguments, and everybody wrote one down on a piece of paper. And even though the topics were anonymous, it wasn't that hard to figure out which one came from Aunt Cakey. While other people wrote things like flowers, romance novels, turtles, pets, television, fashion, and pop music, it was obvious that Aunt Cakey wrote the time Susan stole Cakey's boyfriend when they were teenagers. Mom and Aunt Cakey launched right into a fight about something that happened the last time they came to Ruddy Neck Island. Apparently, Aunt Cakey was dating a lifeguard she met one summer, but then Mom snagged him for herself. So I finally had an answer to the question of why Aunt Cakey and Mom don't get along. Mom told Aunt Cakey that stuff happened a long time ago and she should let it go. But I guess Aunt Cakey still hasn't gotten over it, even after all this time. I could tell the conversation was making Dad uncomfortable. He didn't seem thrilled to be hearing a story about one of Mom's ex-boyfriends, and Vincent didn't look like he was enjoying the conversation that much either. Then, Aunt Cakey accused Mom of stealing one of her meatballs, too. But Mom said Grandma put more meatballs in her bag, so that must mean she likes her better. The rest of us could tell this conversation wasn't going anywhere good, so we just started clearing the table. Vincent volunteered to do the dishes, because apparently he's still trying to score points with our family. But if you ask me, he's wasting his time, because the only person he needs to impress is Grandma. I think Vincent regretted it right away.